Coming to you live from the studios of AM 1400 KKZZ, Ventura County's inspiration station, this is the Kim Pagano Show. Kim is Ventura County's mom and more, bringing you value in every way, every day. Join Kim and her friends as they interview interesting and inspirational guests, featuring everyone from authors and entertainers to doctors and experts. You can join us and share your journey by giving us a phone call at 805-639-0008. And now, here's your host, Kim Pagano.
Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here.
Lose control. All right, all right. Are you? Did you ride in on your motorcycle today?
I did.
Oh my God! Did you have like a? You know, where's your big jacket?
My big jacket. My leather. My leathers are right over there.
I'm telling you, was it freezing? What is going on?
Freezing? No, freezing is 32 degrees or below. So it was probably in the 40s.
Yeah, it was 46. Okay, if you were not.
Yeah, no, it was brisk. But I vowed to again wear my my Hawaiian shirt for Monday. It's Aloha Monday.
There you go. We're going. I'm getting you a couple new shirts. There you go.
Oh my God, I can hardly wait to get back to Hawaii.
I know, I know. Well, I welcome everyone to my show, which we call the Kim Pagano Show, and it is Motivational Monday.
Indeed it is. We're here to pump you up.
That's right. Just feel good. If you can just get out of bed, even though it's like a, you know,
an hour earlier.
Yeah, in fact, I was like, I wonder if Dr. Steven got up today. No.
Yeah.
But anyways.
No, I was lounging around on my couch eating a leftover donut this morning and lost track of time. I didn't get here as early as I normally do.
Yeah, but and that's, you know, we're all good. We're all good, right?
So made it on time.
There you go. Definitely. Well, I welcome everyone to our show. And today we've got Dr. Steven Trudeau. I've got my mother-in-law here. And she's actually one of my listeners, but she's in my studio today. We got Matt on our board at 805-639-0008. Let me tell you all the ways that you can get in touch with us.
Oh, boy. Here it comes. It's a big list.
Yeah. It's KimPaganoShow.com. And you can listen live up on the right-hand corner and stream us.
You
can,
yeah, you know, and that's a great way to get your friends involved in the Kim Pagano Show. I email that to people all the time.
They say, you know,
I have friends on the East Coast, and they'll say, you know, how can I listen to you? You know, because we don't get the airwaves this far. Yeah, obviously. And I say, oh, well, go to the Kim Pagano Show, and in the upper corner there it says Listen Live, and you click right there, and then you've got a link, and you start listening to the show live. So you can send it to anybody, anywhere,
yeah,
and they'll listen. I have a friend of ours who listens in Holland.
Oh,
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. And, you know, I want to remind everybody because, you know, it's funny. I've been getting a lot of new listeners, and they all say, I was just listening to Tom Spence, the news, all of a sudden I'm like, hey, wait, I walked out for a second. What happened? Well, we are a feel-good show, and we are, you know, it's all positive talk here.
Exactly.
So once you've already gotten your news out of the way, right, which, I mean, it's really important. They do a great job.
You need to know what's going on in the world, but I'll tell you, you know, sometimes you need a little boost of enlightenment and a little boost of motivation and what you bring to the show, you know.
That's what it's all about, yeah. So I'm really excited today. You know what? In fact, were you like a Boy Scout or anything like that?
I was what they call a Weebolo.
What the heck is a Weebolo?
A Weebolo is a level of the Boy Scouts, and it's above Cub Scouts, but I think below the Wolf Pack or something like that. And I was a Weebolo back in 1976 and was able to attend the Boy Scout Jamboree, the Bicentennial Boy Scout Jamboree.
Wow.
So
my mother-in-law's not. It was my husband one? Oh, see, my husband was one too.
Yeah.
See, you just keep learning new things all the time.
Yeah, being a scout is a really impressive part of a young person's life. And you know, all the girls in our neighborhood belonged to the Girl Scouts or the Brownies. There was a lot of those.
That's
around.
Right.
But it seemed like the Brownies were kind of the younger ones.
That's right.
And then the Girl Scouts they had more prestige.
Right. Well, I was actually a campfire girl. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I was like on the other end of it, and then I was also a Girl Scout. So
I could just
and
see
a brownie,
you with a,
you know?
I could see you with the sash.
That's
with all
right.
Did you have a lot of ribbons?
That's right. Yeah.
Badges.
And my girls were that. And then my boys were in the Boy Scouts. So, yeah. But today we're going to be talking about Juliet Gordon Lowe. She was actually the founder of Girl Scouts,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty amazing. It's been 100 years. And,
wow.
you know, as everybody comes out of all their grocery stores right now.
Oh, yeah. The cookies are everywhere.
Have you ordered them? Do you eat those?
Occasionally. Yeah. I try not to overindulge because they are enormously addicting,
yes,
as everybody
are.
Knows. But I buy my obligatory boxes,
yeah,
and then I give them as gifts. So.
There you go. Perfect. You know, it's funny because I was walking into the grocery store and I thought, you know, I've already bought. And then I remember how you just need that one more.
What
unit.
It feels
yeah.
like to.
And it's funny. So I put $4 out of my grocery thing and was ready when they came out and they're like, would you like to? And I said, yeah. And they're like, oh, good. One more. And I go, one more and you met your quota. And the mom goes, no, one more and they get to go have lunch, you know? So, but
I appreciate it when the young ladies do the selling themselves with that particular aspect of it rather than the moms do it. I mean, I know that sometimes the moms really want to help out, but, you know, bringing your list to the office and trying to get, you know, 100 of your coworkers to, you know, pad the, you know, the thing, you know, obviously the money goes to a good cause and all, but I don't know. I just, there's something about the girls being involved in this entrepreneurial type.
Oh, yeah,
aspect.
Definitely. But
and
let me tell you.
And I like them telling me, what are you doing? Oh, I'm working on this badge. I'm working on that badge. I'd like to hear that they're doing more than just selling, that they're, you know, that they're selling themselves as an organization.
Well, it's funny because I was a leader. And so I ended up doing when I was at one of my hair salons years ago for my oldest daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Brownies. And I sold over 1,000 cookies, okay?
Wow.
But guess what? We lost the list.
Oh,
so they
no.
were in our freezer forever. My
oh,
husband's
my
like,
God.
Oh, my gosh. So anyways, we had Girl Scout cookies for a long, long time, you know? never say. Also, I did, I got the award, but
yeah.
My husband and I had to write a big check out, and then we ended up selling them.
Wow.
But anyways, but it's a great cause, and I think it does show them leadership in an early age. So
mm-hmm.
I'm really excited to be hearing about that. Also, at the beginning of our show, we're going to be talking about your fears and
fears?
Do you have fears?
Not really, no.
Okay, yeah. Not your fears.
I abandoned them a long time ago.
Did you? And how did you do that?
You know, when I was going through a personal transformation, I just made a decision that I was going to face every fear and that if my automatic instinct was to recoil, that I was going to move forward and literally walked into the dark. Being afraid of the dark, and would find the darkest places I could find, and just face them. And if there was a skill or a strategy that needed to be there to help support me, then I went for it. So when I started studying martial arts, one of my fears was being picked on by people. And this is when I was very young, because I lived in a kind of a rough neighborhood when I was younger, and I was a small kid, so I got picked on. When I learned the martial arts, then I acquired the skill to defend myself, and I was no longer afraid.
So it's all about having the right skills, the right tools, and
attitude.
And
yeah.
attitude, yeah. You know, and I have to tell you, I always tell people, don't fear anything, because once you fear it, God's going to put it right on your plate.
Oh.
And
I really believe that.
You know, and so you know, you deal with it, you face it, and then you walk through it, like you're saying. So, well, I'm really excited because we have Dr. David Tolan coming on, and his book is Face Your Fears. And not only that is, you know, there's a lot of people with phobias and anxiety.
Oh, sure.
And just there's so many things out there.
Well, and you know, the thing about phobias that is really remarkable is that the person who has the phobia is completely aware that it's irrational. So what's happened is they've become conditioned to an automatic response that their body is biologically responding to the panic when they see the the small spider across the room. They get that it's illogical. That's the whole definition of a phobia. It's this irrational fear of something to a huge degree. So sometimes it's not all just up in your head. It's everything else is going on as well.
Isn't that crazy? Well,
crazy.
It is crazy. I know, but I mean, it is. It does make you, you know, maybe you're going to have a party and you're going to have people over. That's something that you get nervous.
Yeah.
You want to make sure it's going to be perfect. Nothing's perfect. Just have a great time. You know, there's just so many things in our lives that kind of get us to that point.
And as a human animal, we get to worry about things in advance of the actual pain of whatever it is. we're going to experience.
Right. And so, we express it.
Yeah.
That's, if we could not use our words, we wouldn't be able to walk through those things. We'd have to just deal with it, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
maybe a little
anyways,
bit more.
Yeah. Anyways, I am really excited that you are starting your day with us here in a positive way. And if you have a comment, which we totally welcome your comments and your anything that you have to say, if you're going
to join the show, 805-639-0008.
All right. And David, are you there?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You got it. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your fears and what why you've actually chose this path.
Well, you know, I'm a clinical psychologist. Mm-hmm. I'm both a therapist and a researcher. And, you know, the area that I've been involved with for the past 15 years or so has been what we call the anxiety disorders. But these are essentially people who have a debilitating fear or anxiety of some kind. So now I'm not talking necessarily about a little tiny bit of fear. I'm you know, the kind that maybe keeps you on your toes or makes you focused or do a better job. I'm talking about the kind of fear
that leads to
a breakdown in functioning. So the person really starts to feel like, you know, their quality of life is being hampered by this. And that might be people with phobias. It might be people with social anxiety, people with panic attacks, people with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, people with, post-traumatic stress. I mean, there's a whole range of these concerns, but they all kind of share this common characteristic, which is that the person has been sort of hijacked by their fears. And what I wanted to do was put together a program that people with these kinds of fears can use that helps walk them through the steps that they need to take in order to overcome the fears.
Wow, really interesting topic. And, you know, it is, so many people go through this. Is there a way to feel before it comes on?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Is there a way to feel it before?
Yeah, figure out your triggers before they go full blown.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that a lot of the time what we find is that a fear kind of comes on insidiously and it creeps up on you rather than hitting you all at once. And so often what we'll find is that a person who's paying attention to themselves can identify, you know, when their symptoms might still be kind of in the mild to moderate range, and nip them in the bud before they become severe. You know, and that's sort of the best case scenario. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people wait until the problem is severe and really debilitating, but they can be helped too. I mean, there's no reason why people should have to suffer from debilitating fears forever. I mean, these really are very treatable and addressable kinds of problems.
Right.
It's one of the things you do to take care of yourself. I mean, there's so many things you need to do, eat right, exercise, and be healthy, but you need to take care of your mental health as well, is that when you know that there's a thing that gets you down or gets you anxious, you should do something about it, and you should seek out the advice and the help. And it's not admitting that you're broken in any way. It's just admitting that you've developed a maladaptive pattern of thinking. And, you know, there's excellent books like this and therapists and people and coaches, life coaches, that can really help you remove the barriers to your success.
Well, I'm really glad that you bring that up, because this is really one of the sad facts is, you know, of all the things we have in the field of mental health care or even health care more broadly, anxiety disorders are among the most treatable and resolvable problems we know of. And yet, only a tiny, tiny minority of people with these kinds of problems will ever even make an attempt at doing the kinds of things they need to do. Most of the time, it's because they don't even know such strategies exist. They don't even realize that there's a way to get out of this. And that's why I wanted to make this accessible to as wide a range of people as we could.
You know, and I want to just remind anybody that's just tuning in right now, you are listening to the Kim Pagano Show. I'm Kim. I'm here with Dr. Stephen Trudeau. We're talking to Dr. David Tolan. You are the founding director of Anxiety Disorder Center. You've been on Good Morning America, Today Show, Dr. Oz, Oprah, And you have are investigating the National Institutes of Health, right, in all areas so that you can help people. And I think it's so important because, like you just said, that where do we go? What do we do? You know, a couple of my children have anxiety. I could see it, and I kind of walk them through it, you know, at times. But I had it. I mean, I'm sure we've all experienced it. But when do you know that it's a huge problem?
That's a good question because, you know, fear is everywhere. I mean, everybody has fear. It's a built-in reaction. And by the way, it is inherently a good thing. I mean, fear is what
keeps us
from
putting our
traffic.
Right.
It keeps you from being eaten by lions and tigers and bears.
It does.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of fear in a way, you know. But I think that where you're going to draw the line is at functioning and quality of life.
Yeah.
So if you have a little bit of fear, I mean, I talked with a lot of people, for example, who are in your profession, Kim,
yes,
who say they still get a little bit of stage fright, but they're happy with that because they say, you know what, a little bit of stage fright actually makes me focus a little bit
sharp.
Better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the top of my game. I don't make mistakes this way. Fine.
I definitely agree.
That if you turn up the volume on that fear to the point where you actually start to perform not as well, or you just are so miserable that you hate it, that I think is where you've crossed the line. You know, so when it goes from being a functional adaptive fear to being a dysfunctional maladaptive fear, that's the best distinction we can make.
You know, David, you just said something about preparation, okay, and being a radio host, if you're not prepared, that might
True.
Be where you have, you know, your fear come in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're thinking you're not going to have enough to say. Maybe your guests aren't going to be here, that kind of thing. Now, let's take that into our lives, okay, is if we're, you know, maybe we've
prepared
lost a
life.
Job
yeah.
or maybe we are just going to have new children or our parents are aging.
Or you carry a spare tire in your car.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. Or we, you know, are our cars maintained? You know, I mean, there's just so many things. So how do we, for my listeners, make our life easier?
Well, you know, I think it certainly makes sense to prepare for what you can prepare for. But, of course, you know, when you get into these debilitating fears, often the fears are going into areas where the person really can't prepare. I mean, so the person, you know, who's afraid of dogs certainly can't avoid dogs for the rest of their lives. And the person who's afraid of social interaction really can't become a hermit. And the person who's, say, afraid that their heart's going to start racing and, you know, they can't just keep their body calm forever. There's no way that anybody has that level of control over themselves or over their environment. And that is really where we come to the concept of facing your fears, that if you are afraid of something, and that something could be external to you, it could be internal to you, but if you're afraid of something and that fear is debilitating and there is no really good reason to be afraid of it, that is, this is mostly an irrational fear, then the number one thing a person can do is put together a plan for starting to face that thing in a systematic manner so that they can show themselves that nothing terrible happens and that they can handle it.
So you take one little step at a time, right?
Yeah. Well, systematic desensitization is a strategy that's been used for a very long time, and it's probably one of the most effective and most well-researched and proven strategies for helping people overcome almost anything that they're oversensitized
absolutely.
To.
Yeah. Broadly speaking, we refer to this as exposure, you know, that the idea is that you know, when you're afraid of something, you do have to confront that, and you do it in some kind of a controlled and systematic manner, but you do eventually have to get in there and face the thing that you're afraid of, no question.
A lot of people feel like, because they don't know the process, they're unaware of the process, that if they have to face their fears, they feel like they're going to be flooded.
Right.
And by doing it systematically, let's say you're afraid of dogs, but we start with a stuffed animal of a dog and move our way up to small, fluffy, non-threatening dogs, all the way up to the larger
bull.
Dog.
No.
Well, over time, yeah.
Right, right.
But if you just flood somebody and put them in a room or a cage with a pit bull, they're going to pop fuses. And that's where you can really actually injure somebody when they are not prepared for a flooding experience.
You definitely do want to make sure that you have a reasonable plan. And that's sort of what I'm trying to do in this program is help the person to design a reasonable and step-by-step plan that's going to give them kind of the right amount of anxiety and give them the right amount of challenge mm-hmm. without it being too much or too little.
Great. So mm-hmm. here's a question. Where do we start?
The very first place you have to start is really understanding what it is that you're afraid of. And that is often a more complicated question than it might seem. Mm. You know, the person who's, let's say somebody has social, you know, anxiety. And so they're worried, let's say they're worried about meeting new people. So if we ask them, what are you afraid of? The obvious answer is, I'm afraid of meeting people. But if we drill down a little bit more, what we really find in a lot of cases is, well, fundamentally what I'm afraid of is that I'm going to embarrass myself
Indeed.
In some way.
Yep.
That people
yep.
will see that I'm anxious and they will think badly of me.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're going to start. And so now what we want to do is put together a plan for starting to address those specific fears. How do you overcome your fear of embarrassment and your fear that other people will see you being anxious?
And okay.
Yeah. Do you also find, because I've been noticing this in my practice with people who come in with anxiety disorders, is that a lot of times they are unaware that that anxiety can be a normal experience. So I try to normalize it for them. For instance, with the stage fright thing, I have people who are very talented who ask me to eliminate their stage fright.
Right.
And I tell them, why would you want that? The best performers have stage fright, but they control it. They handle it.
That's right.
This idea that the only way I can step on stage is if I have the complete absence of fear is a falsehood.
One of the things that we'll see in a lot of anxiety-related problems is that the person gets very hung up on the concept of control,
mm-hmm.
that they believe that it is both possible and necessary to have a level of control over, say, themselves, whether it's their body or their thinking or their environment or their behavior, that is simply not possible or necessary. And part of overcoming it involves helping them to understand the reality of the situation.
Right. David, we actually have a caller. They didn't want to be online, but they wanted to me to ask you if they want to fire somebody or let somebody go. That's a very big fear.
Mm-hmm.
How would you walk through that?
Well, I think that here again, if somebody really has a fear, this is part of their job, and they're really afraid to do it to the extent that they're avoiding doing it, then I think what you'd want to do first is kind of drill down what exactly is it about this that bothers you. I would also encourage them to go through some exercises to help them understand the extent to which they are thinking about this rationally versus irrationally. And so, you know, often what we find is that people have kind of screwy ways of thinking about things. They worry, for example, that some things are going to happen that probably aren't going to happen, or they are kind of magnifying the importance of certain mm-hmm. things that might happen. And so once they start thinking about that, then we want to have them start to put together a plan for confronting the thing that they're afraid of. And sometimes that means actually practicing the thing that you're afraid to do. Maybe you find somebody who can help you that will help you practice this until you can desensitize to it so you don't feel quite so bad about it.
And that's where I come in with having your support team. I really do. You know, I have a woman's support group. And it's interesting because we just talked about, you know, what are you most afraid of? What is the hardest thing that you walk through? And there was a couple people that were, you know, a couple people are empty nesting right now, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden they have to be by themselves.
And what's great about what you're doing with your group is you're sharing the wisdom. You don't believe that any one person has to know everything. You're acknowledging that other people have wisdom and that they can help me through this.
Yeah, there certainly is no substitute for having a good support network and a group of people. Now, of course, not everybody has access to that. And so in the Face Your Fears program, I've tried to include lots of you know, verbatim descriptions from people who have suffered through these kinds of fears and have faced them and gotten better, so that the reader can understand, you know, from somebody else's perspective kind of what it feels like to have a fear and what it feels like to work on and recover from that fear.
I think that's important.
What about the physiological effects of the anxiety left untreated?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's a bit of a double-edged sword because, you know, on the one hand, there's some literature suggesting that you know, if you have kind of an untreated anxiety, that your risk of illness goes up, your immune system can be compromised, it's not good for your cardiovascular system and so on. But on the other hand, there are also a lot of people, and I would especially include people with, say, panic disorder or people with generalized anxiety disorder, who have the mistaken, who amplify that, and they have the mistaken notion that my anxiety is going to make me drop dead right now, mm-hmm. and therefore I have to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I'm talking with people like that, I will usually say, yeah, look, you know, it is a risk factor, and ongoing untreated anxiety is not good for you, but also let's keep it in perspective. It's also not going to make you drop dead right now. You know, it's maybe the equivalent of smoking. Not good, probably good to deal with it, but also let's not blow it way out of proportion and think that you're going to keel over if you do it.
A lot of people with the panic disorder issues, their real fear is fear of having a panic attack.
That's right. Sometimes we'll even refer to panic disorder as fear of fear.
Now, if anybody's just tuning in right now, I just want to remind them that we are talking to Dr. David Tolan, and we're talking about fears. I mean, really,
anxiety,
fears, compulsions. Panic attack, phobias, obsessions.
Which affects so many people, and I think it affects people, some people silently because they're embarrassed by it, so they don't ever tell anybody, and they suffer in silence.
And that's the one thing that I want to say is what happens, I mean, how do you, you know, there's fear of death, okay, there's fear of throwing things away. You know,
the hoarders.
Yeah. You actually were on the hoarders too, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was. Yeah.
What is that? What is it that we're afraid of when we're? And now, have you ever had a? What's your fear? I mean, have you already gone through that? Have you ever had a panic attack?
Sure. I mean, I think actually most people have had something like a panic attack.
Anybody in graduate school has had panic attacks.
Yeah, I mean, I think more often than not, when we have a panic attack, it's because, you know, something really scary or stressful is happening to us. I think everybody's got their quirks. You know, I'm certainly still no fan of spiders, but I'm working on it. But I think that again, the more we can start to face these things that are scary, the more we start to realize that nothing really bad is happening. So my strategy, for example, is that whenever I see a spider, I make a point of going over to it and introducing myself and getting involved with the spider. And I hate it, but I also realize that I'm getting stronger as I do it and that the fear is getting weaker.
It's kind of like when you go to the gym, all the personal trainers will tell you, or they'll ask you, what's the exercise you dislike the most? And as soon as you answer, they tell you, guess what? That's what we're going to be doing.
Oh, yep. Man.
Yeah.
Well, and like your personal trainer, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what happens to your body, is that if you avoid a particular exercise, that area will atrophy. Same thing with your mind. If you avoid dealing with a certain aspect of your personality, a certain aspect of your humanness, it'll atrophy to a point to where you are kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You are weak in that area.
That is a wonderful point, and I think it's one that gets lost so often, which is that, you know, when you have fears and anxieties, your avoidance has become part of the problem.
Mm.
It is not simply a reaction to the problem. It is part of why this fear has gotten so magnified, is because you've been avoidant, and we have to reverse that process.
That's great. That's great. I just had something I was going to ask you.
I know there's so many good things to go on here, isn't there?
Now, you know, here's the thing. You know, there's a lot of kids out there that are young, and, you know, they're starting to do cutting and drugs. And is that because they have fears and we're not teaching them how to go through it?
Well, some do. I mean, when you look at those kinds of behaviors, there's all kinds of different reasons why different people will do them. And sometimes it is an anxiety-related problem. Sometimes it's a mood-related problem. Sometimes it's a social problem. Sometimes it's personality issues, you know. So there's any number of things that could underlie it. But certainly to the extent that somebody is engaging in an unhelpful behavior, like let's say drinking or using drugs, as a way to get over a fear or to cope with anxieties, you know, there are really very straightforward ways that we could employ to start to deal with that.
Now, here's a question. You know, parents, are you a parent?
I am.
Okay, so when your kids ask you, can I go do this? And you're going, it doesn't feel right, but you need to kind of let them go. right? And you get that little bit of that nervous feeling, like, am I doing the right thing? Am I, you know,
That's perfectly normal. I mean, you're supposed to have that.
Right.
Good.
That's what makes you a good parent, is that you have, you know, that your brain is wired to find threat. And that uncomfortable feeling you have is your brain's threat signal. It's saying there may be a threat about. You absolutely want that. That keeps you alive. It keeps your children alive.
Oh, yeah, it keeps you alive.
Right. So the problem is simply when it's gotten out of control so that everything is giving you that same sensation, and you're not functioning well because of it, either as a parent or at work or socially or what have you.
Okay. So for anybody who's just tuning in right now, you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show. I'm Kim. I'm here with Dr. Stephen Trudeau. Our phone number here is 805-639-0008. And we're talking to Dr. David Tolan. Your book is Face Your Fears, correct?
That's right.
Now, it's a self-help guide that gives you tools to take charge and overcome your fears. What are some of those tools?
Well, the number one is what's called graded exposure. And so the basic idea here is that we identify as concretely as we can exactly what it is that the person is afraid of. And by the way, you know, what the person could be afraid of could be a fear of specific situations or activities, like, you know, fear of dogs or fear of flying. It could be a fear of social or performance situations, like public speaking or interacting with people or taking a test. It could be a fear of body sensations, like a fear that your heart races or a fear of that you're going to have a brain tumor or something. It could be an obsessive fear, like a scary thought that you're going to do something out of control. It could be an excessive worry, like a constantly creating nightmare scenarios for what's going to happen. It could be a post-traumatic fear, that is, a constant kind of flashing back to bad things that have happened to you.
Right.
But we identify exactly what it is that the person is afraid of, and then have the person put together a step-by-step, very sensible plan for starting to get back into it so they can confront what they're afraid of, especially confront what they're unnecessarily afraid of, and then start to see that nothing bad happens. We also want to have some strategies in there that help the person to think more rationally about what it is that they're afraid of, so that they can understand when they're blowing things out of proportion and help them kind of bring their thinking back in line with reality. That certainly helps the process.
Okay. Okay. Okay, and so where do we find your book?
You can find it at your local bookseller or on Amazon.com, or you can find information at drtolan.com.
Okay. In fact,
that's
I've got
T-O-L-I-N.
Right.
Yeah, drtolin.com.
All right. And also, now, is that your only book? No, you have a couple books, right?
Right. We have a previous book called Buried in Treasures about compulsive hoarding. And I've also written one on trichotillomania, or compulsive hair pulling.
Yeah, that's another. You know what? I'd love to bring you back to talk about.
Humans are fascinating.
Yeah, there's so many things that can go wrong.
Yeah, there are. You know, and I don't want this one thing to get lost on people. You know, we listed kind of many of your accolades and things that you do, but being a clinician and being a researcher, those are two full-time professions and two full-time areas of study. So it's almost like you have two doctorates. I mean, seriously, when I was in graduate school, they told you to choose, go one way or the other, and I went clinical, and it took all of my time and energy. So to do both, I really applaud you. That's amazing.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. And how long have you been doing this?
Oh, I've been doing this for about 15 years or so.
Really? And Where are you at?
Well, I'm at the Institute of Living in Connecticut, as well as at Yale University School of Medicine.
Very good. Very good. Well, I would love to have you back again, because there's just so many things that we couldn't even touch on, you know.
He's our go-to expert on anxiety.
Yeah.
Time.
Okay, great. Well, you know what? Can you stay with us so we can get your direct number, and we'll go from there. I really appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You got it. All right. For anybody who's just tuning in, we were just talking to Dr. David Tolan, and his book is Face Your Fears, a Proven Plan to Beat Anxiety, Panic, Phobias, and Obsessions.
Man, that's a much-needed
Yeah, as
book.
You take that deep breath and you kind of, you know, every day you just kind of put one foot in front of the other and, right?
You know, I was doing a little bit of research this morning, Motivational Monday, and I was looking up motivational quotes, and you know, it is amazing how many resources there are out there for motivation and for self-help and things like that. I mean, some would even say the market is flooded. But I think when you go through and find these gems that have, you know, real practical skills that people can put into action right now, you know, you really do need to share them with people because, you know, a lot of people have an anxiety disorder and they go to the self-help section of the bookstore and they just get flooded all over again because
or overwhelmed.
Which one
yeah.
do I choose?
Right.
Well, you just heard Dr. David Tolan, you know, if you like what he had to say, now you know that this is the kind of book that can help you.
And that's what I love doing is bringing different people on. You can talk about their journey, and then you kind of resonate with who will be able to help you. So anyways, we are going to take a really quick break. I am so glad that you are here with us, and you are listening to the Kim Pagano Show. Stay with us. We've got lots more.
Grow your business with Ventura's only hometown newspaper, the Ventura Breeze, by reaching our highly targeted audience at affordable prices. Your ad will be read by thousands of local residents, business owners, and visitors. Our affordable rates start at just over $33 an issue, giving you an exceptional return for your advertising dollars. To be included in the next issue of the Ventura Breeze, contact us at advertising@venturabreeze.com.
Hi, I'm Andrea with Hometown Insurance Services. Allied Insurance is a member of Nationwide Insurance Family. Allied will discount your premiums up to 23% if we insure both your home and auto together. Allied also offers many occupational discounts. Please call Hometown Insurance today for a free, no pressure, no obligation quote. Call us at 850-0380 or stop by our office at 4517 Market Street, Suite 1B in Ventura.
This is the Kim Pagano Show on AM 1400 KKZZ. Are you a fan of Kim on Facebook yet? If not, it's extremely easy. Simply go to facebook.com/TheKimPaganoShow and press the like button. You can find all about what's coming up on upcoming shows as well as be entered in special contests to win monthly prizes. It's all for free on Facebook at facebook.com/TheKimPaganoShow. And now, once again, here's Kim.
I like it. And,
okay,
you know
name those singers.
Oh, don't even go there with me, okay? You go for it.
That's Phil Collins.
Okay, yeah. I do love Phil Collins. You're right there. Thank you. That's why I got you here. You got all those names, you know? It's all about putting the right people in your life. So.
But with music, I love music from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and then into the 90s, I start dwindling off. It's like kind of like...
Because you can't understand
Well,
them.
I used to be able to name the manufacturer and model of car from a distance, any car driving down the street. And nowadays, they all look exactly the same, and I've lost it. I've lost that ability to... So as time goes
Did you know that you just said that on,
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I just
I've lost it. Dr. Steve has lost it.
Oh, gosh. Oh, God. You're going to find it.
How did you get motivated this morning?
You know,
I mean, because I get that it's got to be a little more difficult with the, you know, with the time change.
Yeah.
You know, and
my husband got up at 5.
Yeah.
And he left my coffee by there, by my, on the sink. He makes it every morning.
That's nice.
Except for this was just his birthday last week, so I made it for a little while, you know. But I just, you know what? I get so excited when I come in here and get to talk to everybody. So that was my, I was like, okay, let's get up. Let's go. My mother-in-law's here. I had my parents here for the weekend. My sister's birthday was this weekend. So we had a big old family weekend. It was good. It was
really
good.
Lots of family. And,
some people that would be, you know, a little
stressful.
You know, anxiety, right? But no, you know what? I've learned that, you know what? Those are all blessed times, and you know, sometimes you really got to just suck it up and walk through those. So, I had all my kids there, it was good. It was good.
That is good.
Lots of good food. I
was gonna ask, did you do the grocery shopping?
Oh, let me tell you, the Costco run,
anxiety about having to go back. Oops, I forgot something.
No, we always have more than enough. You know,
you keep your pantry stocked.
I do. So anyways, but I am so excited. I want to tell everybody, if you are on Facebook, like us.
Oh, yeah.
I am having a challenge. I'm about to...
You want to hit 500 likes.
Yes. Yeah. I got about 60 more people to go.
You're well into the 400s
there
now,
you
so
go.
That's pretty good. So, you're more than quadruple mine.
Well, we'll get you there. We'll get you there.
But the listeners love you, and they do go and like you. And, sometimes people forget, that they can do that. And there's more information there. And I noticed a lot of your guests will go on after the show and post something about their experience on the show or a resource that they talked about. So, please do go to the Kim Pagano Show on Facebook, like it, and you'll be updated with all kinds of new information and positive stuff.
Right. And what's really hard about the radio is I don't get to see you out there. And so I do want to do a shout out to Brenda, who gave me a call. She's been listening for a couple years now.
Wow.
And it was really cool. She just called to say thank you for making a difference in my life.
Aww.
And, went through some struggles because I know she was calling in for a while, but she's back up, and that's what our life's about is, mm-hmm. Saying thank you to the people that are touching your life and also at the same time sharing where you've been and where you're going. So,
together we can do this.
That's right.
And we have our cheerleaders.
That's right.
I'm one of them.
There you go.
Be motivated on Mondays and various things like that. I try to keep an upbeat attitude, but there are other people.
You do. People love you.
And there are people that I go to for advice and help. One of our friends, Dr. Dennis Merritt Jones, who's a, huge friend and fan of the show.
Yeah.
And
he posts on my Facebook.
He does.
Too.
He
I
does.
See that all the
and
time.
And he's such an inspirational person that people go to, to get that jolt.
Right.
And so we collect these people in our lives, this cadre of humans that can
lift us up when we need it. And
yeah.
Sometimes you don't even have to tell them. You just have to be in their presence, and they just kind of
I love people like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like being in the same room with them. Can I absorb some of your energy?
There
I'm just
you go.
Stand
and,
here.
But I do want to remind everybody to make sure your cup is filled because, mm-hmm. You might be that for other people.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, I want to be a better human being. Every day of my life.
I've
committed to being a better father, a better husband, a better therapist, a better friend, just a better human being every day of my life.
I saw what you wrote on your Facebook about being living up to your dog's standards.
Yeah, I would like to be the man my dog thinks I am.
Okay, I think you are. I just want to tell you that.
So for instance, as a father, I want to be a little bit better father. I don't think, I've already made it, so I'm the father and my son has to do what I tell him to do. No, I want to figure out what can I do to be
learning.
Better.
And keep learning. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and what's interesting is now I'm learning for my children.
And that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. And if you can just keep an open mind and learn from everybody, not ever think that it's over, that you have all the answers, because that's
No. As soon as you stagnate like that, you're in deep trouble.
That's right. Well, we actually have our next guest, and we have Stacy Cordery, and she's going to be talking about Juliet Gordon Lowe, the remarkable founder of the Girl Scouts of the USA.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's their 100-year anniversary. Is that right, Stacy?
Today.
All right. Wow. Amazing. And, what an amazing...
the organization.
Yeah, she had this 100 years ago of thinking that it would be this long and that, what a remarkable journey.
Well, to invest in the youth of America, and the boys had the Boy Scouts going and she felt that something needed to be done for the girls, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah. And so was her Crazy Daisy? What is that? That was her American history figure?
All Girl Scouts know Crazy Daisy stories because they're fun to tell around the campfire. So
okay.
When she was a girl, she could be a little eccentric and a little unusual in her responses to things. And so the funny side of Juliet Lowe, I think, is it helped her find her niche in the family when she was a girl. She wasn't the oldest girl. She wasn't the youngest child. She wasn't a boy. So she could make people feel better. She was a very kind child. And so her funny stories are a part and parcel of Girl Scout lore.
Wow. Well, that's great. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with her story and why you picked it up.
Well, I'm a proud third-generation Girl Scout.
Okay.
And I first learned about her when I was in my brownie circle, and I remember being told that she was deaf and yet had founded this organization that was so important to me and my mother and my grandmother. And then when I got my PhD in history... I had never forgotten her, but I looked at textbooks and so social studies books, and Juliet Lowe is not there. Hmm. Never mind, she started this organization that has affected 50 million American girls and women.
Wow.
And I thought, well, that's a pretty big hole in the historical record.
That so is an amazing, she was a tower of, gosh, I mean, that's inspirational.
Yeah.
51 years old, mm-hmm. deaf, widowed, and childless. That's who founded the Girl Scouts.
Oh, so she was childless?
Mm-hmm.
She never had children.
Right.
Wow. Wow. Hmm. Okay. And so tell us a little bit more about who she was as a person.
Well, she was born in Savannah, Georgia, to a wealthy family right as the Civil War began. So she had a pretty good education. Her mother was one of the founding families of Chicago. And she married a man who had Savannah roots but who lived in England. And their marriage was troubled, so she intended to divorce him, but he died before that could happen. That's how she wound up widowed in 1905.
Hmm.
Then, looking for a way to put her considerable talents to use, she met Robert Baden-Powell, who was the founder of the Boy Scouts. And because Juliet Lowe's life did not go as predicted for women of her era, that is, she wasn't a mother and a wife, she saw in his program great things for girls of all stripes, every economic background, every religion, every class, she said, could be their lives could be changed in a positive way by Girl Scouting.
Well, again, it's a group, and I feel like they have something that they can all share together, right?
Yes, absolutely. And the friendship circles, the all-girl aspect of Girl Scouting is very unique, particularly in 2012, but also extremely empowering for girls then as it was, as you know, in 1912, as it is today.
Right. And now, what do you do as a, do you have children?
I have one 13-year-old son.
Not a Girl Scout.
No, but his best friend is a Girl Scout.
Okay. So, and now, why did you write this book?
I wrote this book, like I mentioned, in part to correct the historical record. It's the first book written for adults about Juliet Gordon Lowe in over half a century.
Hmm.
And it's the first, I'm the first historian to have published a biography of her. And so, consequently, you know, I was able to go back and read her diaries and her letters, look at her friends, try to understand the crazy daisy idea, look into her deafness, put the Girl Scouts into a larger context of other child welfare organizations, but most of all, just to tell the world about this fabulous, courageous, interesting, brave woman. And that is nothing but joy when you're a historian.
Now, was Crazy Daisy the original cookie maker?
No, actually she wasn't.
Oh.
Girl Scouting started in 1912, and it wasn't until 1917 that a group of girls in Oklahoma were casting about for a way to raise some money to fund the adventures they wanted to have. And so they looked at their Girl Scout manual, and they said, aha, well, here's all this section on domestic training and cooking. So they set out to make sugar cookies, which they did. They were apparently delicious, sold everywhere in their neighborhood. And this idea then caught on to, you know, grow and grow and grow to what it is today. But it's the same idea that Juliet Lowe had then as now, and that is girls needed to be invested in the community needed to be invested in girls, and girls should take responsibility for the projects they wanted to do. So when you buy a Girl Scout cookie, you are investing as a member of the community in the Girl Scouts of your neighborhood.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Now, is there any research on how well Girl Scouts do in general society compared to non-Girl Scouts? I mean, anecdotally, I would think that being involved in the community, being invested, having responsibilities, things like that would lead to more college-educated young women, more satisfied young women as a protective element against drugs and alcohol and things like that.
You know, I don't know of any research like that, but I wouldn't be surprised to find it.
I would definitely agree with that. You know what my question is why do you think the Girl Scouts is still so vibrant and continues to thrive in a time right now?
Yeah.
Well, in one sense, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, there are women like Dakota Fanning and Mariah Carey and, you know, people to whom young women today look up. They were Girl Scouts. So So I think the anecdotal evidence that you mentioned a second ago might not be there, but a long list of women from, you know, Hillary Clinton to Katie Couric, they're all Girl Scouts.
Really?
And how the organization continues to work today is that there are so few places where girls can gather, just girls, to hone their negotiating skills, their leadership skills, to learn about things that aren't supposed to be, you know, for girls, like math and engineering and computers, and to go camping, right? Camping's still a big part. So Girl Scouting clearly meets the needs of girls today, and the ability to do that 100 years on is quite spectacular. Very few organizations actually make it 100 years, you know?
Right.
Oh, one other part of that is tradition. You know, Julia Gordon Lowe placed a lot of value on tradition. So Girl Scouts and their sisters of earlier decades all share a pride in the uniform and the promise and mm-hmm. songs and many of the things that they did together. So forward-looking as well as reverencing traditions, that's been a big part of Girl Scouting from Julia Gordon Lowe's very first troop meeting.
You know, I noticed that the merit badges merit badges would be that they've evolved. To continue to be cool, they now have merit badges for, you know, computers and things like that. It's not dated. Yeah, it's not dated
there
is what I'm
go.
Trying
yeah.
to say, yeah.
You know, and I do think that at an early age, it does give you goals right off the bat as you're younger to reach these.
Mm-hmm. And that you work towards them.
Right, and so you're kind of fulfilling your goals at the same time. And I do think as early on when you're young and maybe you're just, you know, maybe you don't have that in your family and you have a leader that inspires you, I think it's a great way for kids to get involved. And I think that this would be interesting for the young adults to be able to know who the founder was.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I do. Where do we find your book?
Julia Gordon Lowe, the remarkable founder of the Girl Scouts, should be everywhere by now, from Costco to Amazon.com to your local independent bookstore.
Okay, great. Very interesting. I'm going to read it myself. And, you know, I love leaders. I love leaders, you know, mm-hmm. of just so that they have
they have a vision.
They have, exactly. They have a vision.
And they put it into action.
There's two things. So you have a thought. A lot of people have thoughts, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
How do you actually put it out there and follow all the way through with it?
Keep putting one
and
foot in front of the other.
Yeah. For 100 years, have other people follow in your steps and make it happen.
Right. And if you look at the momentum, I see no reason why this isn't going to continue to go for another 100 years or in perpetuity.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Stacy, for bringing this to us. I appreciate it. And happy birthday for 100 years.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
You got it. All right. Again, you know, there are leaders in all different categories. And
I really like what you said about the goals aspect because, I don't know, there's so many kids that I see in my practice.
That don't have goals.
They don't. And
the values
and if
of
you
it.
Try to give them a goal of some sort, look, I'd like you to work on this aspect or whatever, if they don't attain it almost instantaneously, they get discouraged so quickly.
Right.
If I have a young person who's, their diet has been poor and they're somewhat significantly overweight, and say, come on, let's work on, you know, and their self-esteem is damaged by that. Let's work on getting you back to a healthy place. Forget the numbers, but let's get you to a healthy place. And a week later, they say, well, it isn't working.
Yeah, because
it's a week.
Because everybody now nowadays needs instant gratification. And it's so sad.
And it takes a while to achieve merit badges in Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. You have to work towards it.
Correct. And 21 days before you can even break a habit, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. 21 repetitions is what the common wisdom to form a new habit. And 21 days of repetitions is usually what it takes to form a new habit. But so you know, if you're trying to alter the way you deal with the world with habits, then yes. But just look at I'd like to run a marathon. There is no way I can be prepared to run a marathon next weekend for the LA marathon. It would take me a year of constant exercise of getting out there and running a little bit every day in order to build up the stamina to be able to do that. But what a great goal to have a year long goal.
Right. That's a long time to have
is.
A year long. But
so what? What about a 1 month goal
exactly.
or a 3 month goal?
Just keep
or,
breaking it into sections so that you can kind of work on it.
And achieving something and being acknowledged for achieving that is what kind of cements it. It gives you that positive feel good.
Right.
You know, that's your internal reward that you have accomplished something.
Definitely. Well, I love always having you here.
It is
Motivational Monday.
Yeah.
And Dr. Stephen, give out your phone number.
805-794-7270.
Okay.
And it's easy to find me on the internet.
Yeah.
My blog is doing really well. That's at humansguide.com.
There you go.
Just go check that out.
You need guiding?
Well, you know, I've been writing this blog called The Courage to Thrive.
There you go.
Yeah.
Definitely thrive instead of strive. Right? I mean,
survive.
Survive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
All right. And I'm so excited to have my mother-in-law here, Peachy. And I hope you enjoyed it because she's usually listening from her computer. Matt on the board, thank you so much. And again, if you missed any part of our show, listen from 1 to 2. And if you want to get in touch with us, give me a call at 805-419-0008. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you're thinking. You know, a lot of people have fears of calling in on air. It's like public speaking. And so call me. Just talk to me individually.
Or send an email.
There you go, at kim@kimpaganoshow.com.
Yeah.
Or Facebook us.
Absolutely.
You know?
Go to Facebook,
there's so
write
many
a question,
ways
write a
that
statement.
You can, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate my callers for calling in with their questions. Of course, I end all of my shows with a mommy moment. And today's is, we need to give equal attention to our want-tos and our how-tos in order to achieve anything worthwhile. And, you know, because sometimes we don't know what we exactly want. So with that, anything else that you can add to our day?
I'll just go out and have a great day. I mean, this is your life. Seize it.
You know, and that's something that I said this weekend to a couple of my family members.
Good.
You know?
We're on the same page.
You know what? This is your movie, your radio, your
you're the
day.
Architect of your own destiny.
Absolutely.
Go seize the day.
And you know what? You can change it anytime. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking there in your mirror at yourself, say, am I worth it? Of course you are. Make it your best. You've been listening to The Kim Pagano Show. I'm Kim, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.